please? May I have your attention, please? I want to thank everybody again for coming. I want to introduce our keynote speaker here. But first, I want to recognize Kent and BASF for sponsoring our keynote speaker. Thanks, Kent. Appreciate it. Well, I want to thank the staff here at the Hotel Monteleone. They've been wonderful, haven't they? I told them we'd give a round of applause for you guys. Thanks. Okay, Steve is known by a few of you. He was a former MVP of merchandising at Lawn and Garden, at Home Depot. He has a consulting business. He's a very busy person. I was lucky to get him to commit, and I appreciate it, Steve. I know I'll owe you in the future. But he actually consults with our company, Weber, and he may mention some of his customers, but we certainly value his comments at our meetings. He comes to most of our meetings. I'll be with him next week at a meeting, as a matter of fact, and he just has a real good perspective. So he's going to talk to us about the industry, what motivates the merchants, the health of our industry, and so forth. So with that, I'll introduce Steve Jansen.
Can you hear me? In the back? Okay, good. I appreciate having like 15 green vegetables, so I had to check my teeth before I got up here. There's a lot going on. I'm going to talk to you a little bit about the home improvement business in general, not specific Home Depot or Lowe's or Menards, even Walmart. It's kind of you can apply the things that I'm talking about. I believe you can apply to all of your customers. And so, first of all, a couple of things have happened just this week. I just want to show you how fast the industry is moving. In the last 3 days, this is the news that I heard. Before I start with this one, I heard that everyone in this room is going to vote in the presidential election for the person they dislike the least. Isn't that exciting? I've never voted in my whole lifetime. I've never voted and not liked either one. So what's changed this week? Sears has put Craftsman, Die Hard, and Kenmore. I think this is my pocket's a problem. So that in itself, that's pretty big news. This week, Shervon or Ego kind of announced they're going to buy Skill Tools. This week, Bass Pro Shops has announced they're going to buy Cabela's. Oh, you didn't hear that one. And Amazon is discontinuing the Vine product line review. That's when you send free products to a customer and they do a review for you. They decided that was maybe a little jaded since products were given to them for free. So those are just a few things that happened in the last 3 days. That's how fast our industry is moving. It's pretty incredible. So the home improvement industry is really starting to come back in a nice way. The best thing that could happen to everybody in this room is to have Home Depot, Lowe's, Menards, Walmart. Well, those are the guys that are doing all our business, 75%, right? So we want them all to be healthy. We don't want Home Depot to do well and Lowe's to do bad. We really want them all to be hitting on all cylinders, and they're beginning to do that now. So we're seeing top-line growth come back, and I'll explain why in a minute. New store growth is non-existent. That's a big change, you know, because when I was with Home Depot, I started 234 stores. I left them 15 years later, they had 2,000 stores. We were opening stores every 48 hours. It was crazy. It was fun. But that's what I looked like 12 years ago. I mean, it's a tough industry. I had hair and everything. The average ticket is beginning to grow again, and transactions are growing. Those are the health things you want to look at. Especially in our industry, right? We're all about transactions. We get transactions up, that's every cart that goes through the register, that's a big deal. So one of the key things that you hear people talk about is, oh, Depot sales and Lowe's sales went down because new housing starts are down. Well, that was a nice excuse, but they've never sold a new housing developer in their life. They don't sell those people. What was actually happening when the market crashed and the housing market crashed was existing home sales dropped. So when you look here, this blue line, existing home sales were in that 7 million range per year, and it dropped all the way down here to a little over 3 million. So what do you do when you buy a house or you trade out your houses? You buy lawn and garden products, you landscape your yard, you buy patio furniture. That's the piece that they got hurt on, was existing home sales. You're starting to see existing home sales come back, but they're a long way. So right now, they're at about 5.5 million. They're not at 7 million or over 7 million. So the good news is we still have a lot of room to grow. The new housing market is still very, very sluggish. Very sluggish. And it's still, you know, they talk about how good they are from last month. Well, that makes you the tallest pygmy, right? They're bad numbers. We're just better than the last bad number. So this is completely out of place. But I want you to decide who you are. Retailers categorize suppliers three ways. You are a growth vendor. And a growth vendor, those are vendors that create incremental sales growth for the retailer. They offer innovation. They grow faster than the retail company does. Those are the guys that every single time there's an extra ad or something they want to push, they get the ad space because they're the ones driving the ship. Then there's the maintain vendor. The maintainer vendors, they're following the economic trends. So if your retailer is up 3% comps, you're running 3, 4% comps, you're good. You'll probably remain. You're not going to get extra advertising, but they still need you, right? It's important. And you need to ship at 100% in all of these cases. Then there's rationalized vendors. These are the vendors that don't see it coming because two things happen. One is they don't ship or their product doesn't sell. And they don't necessarily get replaced by their competitor. They often get replaced by a completely different category. Anybody examples of a category that might have followed this trend? Cypress mulch, that could offend somebody else in this room, I'm thinking. Anything else? How about wallpaper? How'd you like to be in a wallpaper business these days, or the paneling business? All right. When I was at Home Depot, I had to make tough decisions. At the time, I had to take a $100 million houseplant category and decide that I could do $800 million in patio furniture in the same space. So houseplants, even though it wasn't profitable because of all the fall and all of that, they didn't lose to another houseplant, guys. They weren't watching the right competition. They just weren't, their business wasn't profitable. And there's a lot going on within retail today where they're rationalizing vendors, but not necessarily for another vendor in a category that's not growing. So think about which one you are and what you would have to do to get yourself to become a growth vendor, because those are the ones that are getting all the love from retailers these days. Earnings release. Boy, those can be boring, can't they? Bunch of numbers. I want to know how many people actually, do you watch the earnings releases from the retailers you sell? Raise your hand. Okay. So you can go through these numbers and you could say, oh, wow, they're big. And then you could say, oh, their margin's ridiculous and it doesn't mean anything. But what happens is that if you were invited to sit down with Craig Menear, the CEO of Home Depot, or Bob Tillman, the CEO of Lowe's, and they said, we're going to sit with you once a quarter with my entire executive staff and we're going to tell you everything about our business, would you accept the meeting? Naturally. So why wouldn't you take an hour out of your time to listen to the quarterly earnings call and find out what's important to your customer for their future growth, what's working, what's happening, what's been successful. It's an hour. It's boring. I'll give you it's boring. But every time I listen to it, I walk away with some nuggets that will help me. And the reason I'm telling you this is the nuggets that you walk away from are the nuggets that you're going to put into your presentations when you're calling on that retailer, because you know what's important to them. And it makes you feel, makes you sound like you're in tune with what their needs are. So, here's a couple details that you pick up from Home Depot. Peak to trough. I like to believe that when I left Home Depot, everything crashed. It did, actually, but it wasn't because I left. But the market got really bad. It was 9-10 years ago. They still have 16 major categories that are below the crash time. Like millwork, for instance, is $1 billion below. Millwork is doors and windows and molding. Is $1 billion below what they were doing before the market crashed. So when you think about it, lawn and garden, for instance, is back to the level that they were 10 years ago. But it took them 9.5 years to get to that level. 9 years to get to that level. So if you were growing during that time period, you're doing pretty good, or growing above the level of the crash. But that's what happened to the industry at that point. The other thing that you're seeing is they're doing line reviews. So they do about a third of the store. All of you are blessed to be in a line review every year. They think that's an advantage to you. I don't. I think it's brutal. But they're using a new assortment tool. And what happens with this assortment tool is, I want to show you something. This would be the approximate volumes of stores. They have 1,982 stores, but only 593 of them are at or above company average. If you had a store that did $30 million and a store that did $100 million, would you put the same quantities? It would kill you. But yet we kind of expect our assortments to look the same in every store and have the same quantity in every store. And this is just kind of, it was kind of a wow factor when I pulled this information and found it. I was like, I can't believe less than 600 of 1,982 stores are above company average or at or above. That's a pretty telling number. So the reason I'm showing you this is that with this new assortment tool that you're seeing at your big retailers, what they're doing is they're assorting based on volumes, demographics, space, all of those things. And basically, the new assortment tools are going to put the right products in the right locations. If you lost 10% of your stores, your bottom 10% of your stores, it would be a rounding error to you. You wouldn't even feel it. But it would really help the numbers of the retailer. So what we're hoping to do is to stock the right type of mulch or soil, the right colors, the right product, and the right stores. And you're going to see more and more of this so that, boy, I won the Home Depot, or I won Lowe's, or I won Walmart, and I got the assortment across the board. There's not that much of that anymore, unless your item's that good. Lowe's detail, the difference between Depot and Lowe's is that Depot's going to give you some real nuggets in their releases. Lowe's is going to be a little more of a paintbrush. But the paintbrush that Lowe's is saying is good. They're saying the customers have more money, the housing values come back, the economy's increasing. So they're pretty bullish on the market, which I'm excited about. Another piece on Depot. Depot's talking about inventory turns. It's kind of a good news. I think everybody remembers back in the days of Nardelli how you went too much inventory and you didn't have any. They just cut all buying and everybody was screaming and the stores were out of stock. What Craig is saying right now is, in the future, I want to get to 5 turns as a company. Now, we're talking about 0.2 of a point movement. To get to those 0.2 of a point, he's put no time level on it. Time limit on it. What he's basically saying is, we're going to do it as long as we don't affect the customers and we make sure we keep our in-stock level at the level that it needs to be. Okay? So those are nuggets that you pick up in the sales calls. The other nuggets you pick on the sales calls is a lot of talk about the internet. Home Depot, $1 billion in growth in 2015 in the internet. That's a 25% increase. The total internet business is $4.8 billion. It's a questionable number. They said 4.3 at a foundation event the other day. I think they're wrong based on the percentages. But it adds 1% comp to the bottom line of the stores. But here's the interesting thing. They talk about interconnected retail. Nice fancy term. But what they did great is originally they set the internet up as a separate business. They set the stores up as a separate business. And the stores didn't embrace the internet. They hated it. Because every sale that went to the internet, they lost in their box. They didn't support it. So interconnected retail, what they said is that if anything is sold within your zip code, you now get credit for it as a store. So now you walk into a store and the person says, oh, you want that tractor shipped to your house free of charge? Let me order it for you online. It's free freight. We can get it to you. They embrace it now, and that's why they've done as well as they have. They're the third largest retailer, I believe, in internet sales. So they took that being at odds. But here's the interesting thing that's going to tie back into this group. 40% of internet sales finish in an orange box. 40%. So, they have 1 million SKUs online, so it's crowded. Omnichannel is Lowe's. Walmart also talks about omnichannel. It's basically the same kind of scenario. Wherever the customer wants to shop, we're going to embrace it. We're going to let them shop online. We're going to let them shop in the store. We're going to let them pick up in the store. We're going to fulfill it to their house. How do they want to buy? Now, I told you all of this for a reason. Is your internet information compelling and educational? Because I would tell you that most of us in this room would say we're commodity products. We don't really play in the internet. Some are going to feel differently, but that's what you see. Go ahead and look at the internet. That's what I see. Customers are shopping ahead and picking up at the store. That is a huge deal. That's not even part of the internet sales. They're getting educated to what the assortment is in that store. They're making decisions at home. They're coming in and they're buying. The question is, can you deliver direct to the customer? That pit in your stomach that you just had right there, I feel it too. It's hard to deliver direct to a customer. Maybe the answer is no. Can you ship special order products directly to a store? So figure out what you can do and start there. It's too easy to say commodity products shouldn't be on the internet and I'm not going to support it. It's much better to approach this from, okay, the first thing that I can do is I can make my entire assortment available online, pick up in store. I'll ship to the store with my other order. Or I can ship 8 pallets. That's the minimum. Do you know how many products are out there right now? Cleaning chemicals. You can only buy them by the case because that's the only way they can ship them. And it's selling. So don't give up on the internet. When you're seeing 25% growth in the internet and it's $4.8 billion at Home Depot, we might want a piece of that. And there's ways to do it. So I just pulled an item up, single item. I'm not picking anybody else in this room. Year-long red mulch at Walmart. This is an exact screenshot. Not exactly a pretty screenshot, but that's Walmart's site. Right? Then you go over here. And you go, I want more information on this item. And I click that, and I learn nothing. There's nothing here. It's a 2-cubic-foot bag, and the color lasts a real long time. That's what I got out of this. Where's the art, right? There's not a video. There's no installation instructions. How deep do I need to put mulch? Right? We all know in this room. You know probably better than I do, but right? We know that. The customer doesn't know that. A bag calculator. I went on some of your sites. Some of you guys have the most amazing bag calculators. There's nothing on the site. I don't know how much to buy. You could drive more of your own sales by doing this stuff right here. And there's not a single photo of a finished job. This is how great my house is going to look if I buy your product. There's none of that. What I'm trying to do tastefully is I'm trying to give everybody in this room a wake-up call. The internet's real and it's here to stay. Embrace it. We were talking about millennials. If you want to get the next generation, you're not going to sell them like this. We're going to sell them by showing how great their place can look by doing the project. And we're going to simplify it. I was on a build the other day at a Home Depot function. We built 11 houses for military veterans. And two millennial guys were standing there talking to each other, and he said, I never swung a hammer in my entire life. I'm looking around going, I think my father gave me a hammer when I was 6. I got him for Christmas when I was 7. Right? I had my own toolbox. He never swung a hammer. He was like 25 years old. So is that guy going to know how much mulch to put down? You really have to get engaged here. We're better than this as an industry, I think. That wasn't too tough on you, was it? I can back off. All right, let's talk about innovation a little bit. Innovation is my favorite topic, and I pulled about 25 slides out of my innovation piece because I didn't want to bore you. But I could talk about it all day. If you want to grow faster than the industry, it comes from innovation. Stealing products from other vendors doesn't significantly grow a retailer's business. You know that. I don't expect you to not fight tooth and nail to get every position in a store and beat your competitor. But I'm trying to tell you why the buyer's not excited when you're doing that. Because they go through all this turmoil, all this work, and their sales are the same. And I'm telling you, if that's the game you want to play, you're going to pay for it dearly because you're going to have to make it all up in gross margin. Because you're not going to get top line out of it. If I change my red mulch from one guy to another, it's more going to be because the other guy's not servicing me, or it's a logistical nightmare, or you're going to have to give it to me really, really cheap. It's the only way you're going to win it. So, but at the end of the day, the buyer sells the same amount, so he's not very excited. That doesn't make you a growth vendor at all. Retailers need product that is newsworthy. The one thing that I found is I was in situations all the time where I had to stand in front of big groups of people and talk about my product. So I was dying for something to talk about. Give me something good. So you have store meetings, you have store walks, district walks, you have analyst meetings, you have news. You got all of this stuff where you're standing in front of people internally and externally. You're dying for great things to talk about. So try to come up with products that are newsworthy. And I know we're talking about soils and mulch here. I get that. But we've done some pretty spectacular things over the last few years of moving up the continuum in this category. So the question is, why don't retailers support your innovation? Maybe it's not very good. Because what happens is they don't either like your item or your strategy. There's a lot of times, and we're all there, right? I'm going to put an additive in this product, and I'm going to double the price. And the buyer looks at it, and he goes, well, I have this item, the base product, at $2. With this additive is $4. You might have overpriced your innovation because it's not worth it. You got to think of it as a consumer. So your buyers are making decisions like that every single day. Now, you got to make money on your innovation. You shouldn't have to work at the same low margins. But don't get greedy there, or you're not going to be able to sell up the continuum. The thing that we're going to hammer home all day long is incremental volume and profits. If it doesn't create incremental volume and profits, it's probably not worth the effort. So when you think about the disruption of the business, will it support the possible upside? So what you're talking about is you have to clearance the old product, you're going to have a period of out of stocks, you're going to have turmoil in the stores, you're going to have training that has to happen, you got to change over all of the system, so you're going to have a downturn. Typically when you make a swap out of a product, it really doesn't pay for itself in year two, because the first year is pretty rough. It takes some time to kind of get up and running, get your history and all of those things going. And then the reality is most of the time these products that they're turning down that we're screaming is innovation are really kind of refresh products for yourself. They're not really new to the industry. Because when they're new to the industry, they're game changing. So let's talk about game changing. To me, the definition of game changing innovation is totally incremental sales volume. Net new. You bring that to a buyer and they wake up big time. Some of them are still going to sleep, but they're just bad buyers. most of them are going to wake up. So what you're looking for is it's going to have little effect on their current assortment, and they start looking at it as, wow, how big is that dollar opportunity? Because those are the ones they don't report to management, and they get their growth in their budget. They don't go out and tell everybody ahead of time. They find these items, do them, and then they make their budget. Any ideas of products that may be kind of game-changing?
Worm castings.
Worm castings. Okay. Big volume?
Can do.
Yeah. Okay. Organic?
Absolutely.
That's a good word. Pretty hot word right now. Isn't all dirt organic, sort of? It's dirt! Well, that's why we have this council, so we can fight that silliness, right? But good, that's a good one. So I'm going to show you a product that I think is game-changing, to just in your mind. It's not about your business, right? It's a product called TruFuel. What it is it's gasoline in a can that's stabilized with no ethanol. Once you open it, it's good for 2 years. So it's not going to destroy your small engines. It's a huge problem today, the ethanol and gasoline, right? It has no ethanol, stabilizes the gas, higher octane fuels, smokeless oils. So why the consumers like it? Right, it's cool. It's a better product than pump gas. Why retailers embraced it? It allows them to sell gasoline when they didn't participate in the market in the first place. They sold the razor, but never the razor blade. They got a gas can and maybe some oil, but they never got gasoline, right? Now the customers are coming into the stores buying gasoline, and it's a great product, right? So it reduces their product returns because they're not putting bad gas in it. It's a consumable item, so people are coming back into the stores, and sales are almost 100% incremental. That's an example of game-changing innovation. This category nationally is almost $100 million now. At retail. $100 million. That's game changing. That's business I never had before. So, your product may be in the same scenario as that. That's what we're looking for. We're looking to move in a big, big way. And this did. Right? Type of innovation. There's a second type. This causes a consumer to throw away a perfectly good item and replace it. Because it's aspirational. It creates significant top line for the retailer, these types of products. So you got to have a couple ideas of what this item might be. Any idea?
Light bulbs.
Light bulbs, yeah. Because of the LED? Yeah, good one. Mm-hmm. Oh, the iPhone. Probably pretty solid. I bet you somebody thought of that. I mean, think about it. Apple is the king of planned obsolescence, right? You hear the younger generation going, I can't wait for 6 more months to get the new phone. What's wrong with the one you got? Mine's cracked, but, you know, waiting for my damn title to get to, I mean, my contract. But let's look at a few, right? Walmart sells Igloo coolers at $15.88. Nobody made any money. You think the buyers like selling Yeti coolers at $449? This is a pretty big deal. How many of these do you have to sell to make one of those make more sense, right? These guys are the darlings of retail right now. Everybody loves them. And do you know it's one of the most heavily stolen items out of the back of trucks right now? A Yeti cooler? Not that you put $500 bills in the back of your truck and hope nobody steals them, but... So, right, you got vacuum cleaners at $79. Dyson came in and changed the industry. They sell $400 vacuum cleaners. People don't even think twice about it. They have a big ball on the end. It goes in all kinds of directions. If you look at Consumer Reports, it's not a better vacuum cleaner. People love it. Shower rod. You can't reinvent a shower rod. Can't be done. So that's like mulch, and that's like soil, and that's like all of our products. It's a commodity. It's been there for years. But how many people have been in a hotel and had somebody else's dirty shower curtain against your skin because the air conditioning went on, and they reinvented it and turned a curved shower rod, and they replaced every shower rod in every hotel in America? I love this. This shows that everything's got a chance to be innovated. Everything. The Nest, right? You remember the, you set your thermostat, you used to turn it, I'm dating myself, but you used to turn a thermostat, that used to cost like $49. Then they had electronic thermostats, and they were 100, and this one's 63. The Nest comes out, they're $249 because you can do it on your smartphone in 6 months when you get a new one. You'll be able to do it on your smartphone. And people are buying them like crazy. And we've done it in our own industry, right? Cypress mulch. We now have premium mulch. Right? Look at the difference. $2.49 versus $2.10. Topsoil. I remember having operators yelling at me like you couldn't believe because I would run topsoil for 99 cents on sale and pay 97. And they go, what are you doing? You're killing our people. I'm driving footsteps in your store. And they're going, no, you're just killing our people. But, you know, you've all come out with moving up the continuum and figuring out ways to sell better quality product, right? I would like to put everybody's brands up on every one of these. I just couldn't find them all fast enough. But, so as an industry, we've done a really, really good job of fixing our shower curtain. But what's the next step? Where do we go from here? How do we keep growing the business? Because I got to tell you, when you're selling soils for $4 versus a buck, that's a nice thing. And the retailers embrace it because they don't want to sell them for a buck. They want to sell it for $4 as long as customers will buy it. So, marketing. I was asked why retailers run such stupid pricing to run these sales all the time with the high-low pricing. Well, we all know the answer to that. It sells, right? It sells a lot of it. But why do they run aggressive promotions? The reality is, it used to be that a Home Depot customer was a Home Depot customer, and a Lowe's customer was a Lowe's customer, and a Walmart customer was a Walmart customer. It's not that way anymore. They shop every retailer. So there's a fight for that share of wallet, especially on those big weekends, where you're like, I got to get that customer into my store. So what's happening is, since there are no longer any new locations, every retailer is saying, how much volume can I get out of each existing box that I have? I have to grow my sales. The only way I'm going to grow my sales is to get people into stores and start transactions. We used to set up the front end of the store. And Pat Farrow was one of the officers of the company in the early days. And Pat used to say to us, if I'm not going to stop when I hit the front door to turn around and grab a shopping cart, you failed. Get a transaction started. Once you have a shopping cart, you're going to put stuff in it. If you get to the back of the store and you don't have a shopping cart, you're most likely going to buy an item and walk out of the store. You got to get them engaged. And so that's why you're trying to drive traffic, you're trying to drive transactions. And what better way to do it than on a consumable commodity item? That's why we're kind of the darlings there. But I'm going to guess this is what your sales trends look like. This would be Spring Black Friday. This would be Memorial Day. This would be the 4th of July. This would be Labor Day, and so on and so forth. Right? Pretty painful. So what's going on here? We were talking about, it's funny, it all came up in the conversation, but, you know, if your wife says, go get 20 bags of mulch, you go get 20 bags of mulch. Is that two trips or one? It's one. So to the consumer, this is a great thing, right? They get a great price. If I work with somebody in the power equipment industry and they say, you can't run that promotion every week, every year the same week, the customer is going to remember that. No, they're not. I don't remember what I had for breakfast. There's no way I'm going to remember on a product that I buy every 7 or 8 years what a retailer ran on ad last year. I'm not going to remember. But on our products, I don't think that's wrong. I think they do remember. I think they remember on big holidays, there's a crazy Black Friday, and there's a Memorial Day ad, and there's a Labor Day ad, and a 4th of July ad. I think they wait for some of these promotions. And I think the people in the stores are going, hey, if you need a bunch, it's going on sale next week. Right? You hear it all the time. So that's a downside. to this. We're starting to get on that drug, and once you get on that drug, you can't get off of it. Right? People aren't going to automatically, instead of spending $3.50 a bag that they're paying $2, they're not going to just start paying $3.50 because you don't run the ad. Because they're not all that loyal. I think everybody wishes that were the fact, but I don't think they're all that loyal. They're buying whatever's on sale when it's a big promotion. So what's in it for the retailer? It creates great traffic. Unfortunately, it disappoints some customers because you just can't keep in stock all the time during those sometimes 10-day periods of time. You have certain days or nights that you're going to run out of stock, and it's very taxing on store operations. For the supplier, it's great volume. Everybody loves the volume. It's a logistical nightmare to pull that off. In some cases, they add suppliers, and you're the everyday supplier. They add suppliers to fill in for you because you can't do it all. You can only get so many trucks. So this is what we're seeing. We're seeing 5-for-10s. We're seeing 3-for-10s. We're seeing 5-for-10s. This is a pattern here. I don't know if you've noticed. This is like a 5-for-10 kind of pattern. So we're seeing this happen all the time. And I do believe the customer's starting to wait. But I have a solution or an option, something that we can think about or work on. The pro business. We were talking about this at the table. My belief, and I'd actually like to see if somebody doesn't believe this, but I believe the pros are now beginning to lean towards buying bags versus bulk because it's a labor nightmare. Put a truck on somebody's driveway, shovel it up, put it in a wheelbarrow, wheel it to the backyard, then you're going to have to clean up the driveway. I'm not seeing landscapers do it anymore. I'm seeing them buying bag goods. Am I wrong?
No.
Okay. That's good for us. If we could only get them to buy soil that way. So I'm still seeing bulk used in larger jobs, but sometimes they got a little bobcat or, you know, it's just a big area that, you know, they're trying to do it. But bulk mulch isn't really that, it's not really cheaper than bag mulch, especially when we got these great sales going on. So the problem with, I'm just on the pro customer, the problem with the pro buying is unlike most products that have everyday low price, mulch kind of has high-low pricing because we have these big promotions. So you're going to see it shift. We're not talking about anybody's specific price. We're just talking directionally. So big box retailers are getting some of the landscape business, but in my opinion, it is your single biggest opportunity for growth is to get a landscaper and get them to shop on a regular basis every week mulch from big box stores. And when I say that, I'm not saying that we're trying to steal the mulch away from somebody else. We're talking about big box stores right now. They are 75% of the business. And you know what? The pros are there, so we ought to figure out a way to kind of meld the two and get the business. So, again, if you look at Depot's earnings release, I'm tying these back into earnings releases on everything that we're talking about. The pro business accounts for 40% of their overall volume. But it's only 3% of their customer base. Only 3% of their customers are doing 40% of their volume. That's what they call the pro. But here's some of the issues. Well, this is a good issue. The pro business is growing 50% faster than the DIY business. Another part of the conversation we had a little while ago, why do I believe that's happening? As the baby boomers age, do it for me is becoming a bigger and bigger deal. Trunk slammers, I like to call them, but small contractors and stuff, they're taking on these jobs that people don't have time for, have the financial wherewithal to have them done for them. And so what we need to do is try to embrace this and try to go after this business. But it is growing faster than the DIY side of the business. But here's the problem. The pro desk is completely disconnected from the garden center. It's on the other side of the building. The knowledge base is really lumber, building materials, millwork. That's kind of the... They don't really focus on the lawn and garden. They're not going to turn a guy away, but that's not the... They usually get, you know, guys that were home builders and stuff to work at the pro desk. They don't have landscapers working there. But the one thing we're not taking advantage of is the bulk pro pricing program. You're seeing it spread all over the stores. This is what it looks like. Buy more, save with bulk prices. So I just finished up a project because I did have a hammer when I was. So this, I'm going to talk to you in short, long, short. I'm dying here. All right. So you're starting to see this in all of the stores. This is kind of a big deal. So I bought insulation. In the price of insulation for the regular and the bulk pricing was like $11.49 and $8.05. I had to buy 24 rolls, so I need 25. Kind of dying here. So, but we're not using this in a big way. So this is the kind of signage you'll see in the store. It'll say bulk price off to the side. You'll have a markdown price. This happens to be concrete, so I tried to pick some bag goods within the store so it shows that it's kind of relevant. But instead of $3.10, it's $2.48, and what you have to do is, I think you have to buy 112 or more of that particular product. For a contractor, buy 112 bags of concrete, that's not a big deal, right? So you don't have to price it in a way that it's going to be for every single customer that walks in, just the big jobs. Right, so you look at Lowe's. 30% of their total is done with pro customers. They have the same issues, right? There's a disconnect with the garden center and the pro desk, but we're not taking advantage of what their contractor pack is. You go into the stores today, they have signs like this. This one is ask for pricing, but many of the items are like this. Here's the contractor pack. You have to buy one case, which is six pieces, and you get that discount versus paying $5.96, you're paying $5.36. So that would be a way, in my estimation, of kind of smoothing those peaks out, having more everyday low price for the contractor, and maybe being able to see those peaks and valleys in your business start to level off a little bit. But that's the kind of signage that you'll see. Now, this one happens to be on concrete. So it's a pretty significant savings. It's over a buck and a half per bag, and you had to buy 70 bags, right? Pallets, maybe, whatever the number is. Okay? Anybody think that the contractor thing is important?
Yeah, but how would that work from the buyer's end? I mean, are they still buying it at the same price? And
yep.
Depot or Lowe's just eating the difference on
yep.
the volume?
Yep. All in the name of getting the contractor to shop with them. So, whoever raises this issue first, you're probably going to hear, well, you're going to pay for that. No. No, you're not. You're at the price. You're at the lowest price you can be. Maybe you won't make the same margin. They won't make the same margin. But don't get baited into that. Just, it. You know what? You're suggesting, so let's see if we can get that pro customer to shop on a regular basis. It doesn't need to be on every item either. It just needs to be on the items that the pro's buying. You know? I think it has some merit, but that's me. Damaged product. Everybody loves this subject, but I couldn't help but to take a couple pictures when I went around the stores, and I'm just going to challenge you with something that's going to take a half a second. So I walk in a store, and this is what I see, right? Pull the bags off the truck, the bottom bags rub, they tear pretty consistently. It's been going on for 30 years, 40 years. Doesn't change much. But the one thing I noticed is that the majority of the bag damage happens on the bottom one or two layers. Wherever I walked in the store, the bottom one or two layers had this rash on it from moving the pallets around. The rest of the product looked fine. Now, am I saying that no other product gets damaged? No, I know customers poke their fingers through when they're lifting and pulling on a cart. That happens. What happens is when we try to address everything, we do nothing. So if you have to build a bag that's so strong that it's like a Yeti cooler, right? You're not going to afford to be able to sell mulch. But the question is, what if you took this same situation, right? Because it was every pallet pretty much. Think about what we could do to address the problem, focusing only on the bottom two layers. Just the bottom two. Could you put a piece of cardboard around there when you shrink wrap it? Right? Is there a clear cellophane thing that you could put on there? I'm not talking about a pallet skirt that nobody can afford. Pallet skirts are great. They're just too expensive.
Bring your wrap up on the bottom layer. Two more layers of wrap on the monster. That's all you got to do. Automate it. Say, I want three.
problem fixed. I'm with you on it. But, I mean, this is happening consistently, and it's not one vendor. I mean, wherever you go, this is a little bit of a problem. But all I'm saying is think about it differently. Focus on the bottom two layers, not on every bag, because I understand you can't afford every bag. He said put, instead of three wraps on the bottom, put six on the bottom. Give it some extra protection. Sounds reasonable. I think we just problem solved the world right now. Do you know how many buyers are going to give you a big kiss on the lips for that? It's really good. Big deal. So I told you it would be short, but I was having trouble. When every picture I looked at, they had ripped bags. You don't want a kiss on the lips from your buyer? Yeah, I figured that. All right. How are we doing? We're okay? All right. Let's talk about financials for a minute. You know, when I started in the industry, what it was based on is the person who had the most product knowledge and passion for the make a good buyer. It's not that way anymore. Have you ever presented to a buyer that says, "I don't know anything about this product. I've never swung a hammer in my whole life." To your new buyer. They're all like that. And the reason it's changed, I remember, Bob Nardelli told me that any idiot could be a buyer as long as they can handle a spreadsheet. I was offended. I wasn't very good at spreadsheets. I didn't tell him that. I am now a whiz at spreadsheets, right? The next day I went to school. But the buyers changed dramatically. I mean, it's really a significant change. And it's changed for you, and that's what I want to tell you what you have to do differently. So, suppliers can't stand the word. Every time you walk into a meeting, and they say, "I have something new," and they go, "What are you taking out?" Doesn't seem like you ever get a net new. And there's a reason for that, right? Remember, there's not an infinite amount of space. The only way they could just say, "Oh, great, let's just put that in," is if they didn't fill their space last year. They left a third of their space empty for you in case you came up with something. It doesn't work that way. So the space, come up with a new item. First thing that they have to do is they have to decide what gets replaced. Now, what I'm going to suggest you do, make sure that if you have any ugly children, you take care of them and remove them. Take care of your own business. Right? You can't go after somebody else's product and then keep your bad stuff and just act like it's not happening. You will have no credibility with the buyer at all. If you have a bad item, I would suggest you immediately go in and say, "I got a bad item, I got an item to replace it." The buyer will respect that, as long as the item that's going to replace it looks pretty good, right? But remember, all of these changes is going to come down to financials. Everything is going to play the financial game with them. So the days of going in, I have a friend of mine, I think he's the best salesman that ever walked the earth. The guy's amazing. He's a dinosaur. He's useless in our industry now. Because he's trying to excite a buyer that's looking at a spreadsheet. You can't excite people that way. And he admits it. It's killing them. So the first thing you need to do is you need to see how a buyer is bonused. Do you think a buyer is doing those numbers because they're being self-serving to make a bonus? Look, everybody wants to make a bonus. The reality in retail, if you do not make your numbers, you're fired. It's awful, especially as these retailers get bigger. You get these buyers, you go, "I really like that person. They were really good. They didn't make their numbers." You don't make your numbers in retail, you don't last. So the reality is, that's why everybody's pulling in and saying, "I'm going to make less changes, I'm less disruptions to my business, and I'm just going to make my numbers." Right? If their inventory number is off and they've already made their sales, you know what? they're going to slow down the buying. They made their sales number. They're going to get their inventory number in line, so they make their numbers. It's not just for their bonus. The bonus is the reward. But the flip side of that reward, if you don't make it, is pretty brutal. So what you have to do is find out what they're judged on. Sales, inventory, gross margin return on investment, turns, gross margin dollars, or gross margin percent. I don't know anybody that's being judged on anything other than those pieces. So, learn them, align your strategies, and do not go into a meeting without a spreadsheet that says what effect your changes are going to have on the industry, on your business. If you go in and you're just kind of potluck and you say, I want you to add this item, you've now put all the work on the buyer to crunch that number, to crunch that spreadsheet to see what it's going to do. So let's use your own example. You have a bad product. You decide to replace the bad product with a new product. You put a projection in. This is what your cost and your retail and your gross margin is going to be. If you make this change, here's the net effect of your business it's going to have. When you speak to a buyer in that language, they trust you because you're speaking their language. When you go into a buyer and go, what do you think of my new item? The buyer's like, well, what am I going to replace it with? Well, I just what do you think of the item first, and then we'll move on. A buyer doesn't have time for it. So the next thing to do is a buyer just kind of puts it in their pile of things to do, and you know what that pile of things to do says? No. They don't have time. It's ridiculous what they've put on their plates. So I'm telling you all of this because we can be our best salesman. And to be the best salesman you possibly can is take the strategy of those numbers and put them on paper and show them what it means. So, inventory. You want to understand their inventory goals and try to build your plan accordingly. Right? Understand that each one of these pieces, whether it's gross margin or it's top line sales or it's inventory, it is budgeted by category. You're not budgeted by the department, and hopefully it all works out at the end of the day. They know what, that buyer knows what their budget is. And what you want to do is get a relationship that's good enough where they'll share those numbers with you so you can actually build your plan to match. You want to make that buyer successful. If you make them successful, what are you going to be? Probably a growth vendor. The plan can change as a game time decision. We all know that, right? You don't get the weather. They decide they have to cut back their inventory a little bit. Those things happen. You just got to go with the flow. All right. The piece I also like to look at this with a game time decision is if you have $200 to spend on groceries and you had a car repair and your $200 wasn't there, you'd eat what you have. You wouldn't say, but I got to have eggs. No, you'll eat cereal. That's all that's to it. You're going to eat what you have. So what happens to a buyer is you're going, because that other vendor did a bad job of controlling their inventory, I'm suffering. Sometimes that happens. But with the automated replenishment systems that are in place today, it happens a lot less. So the inventories are much more balanced and is more weather related today than it's kind of bad behavior on a vendor. That used to be the case, but you're seeing a lot less of that today. So, and merchants now are being held directly accountable for their inventory levels. So look at gross margin. The first thing is, you need to understand whether a buyer works on gross margin dollars or gross margin percent. It makes a huge difference. Today, Home Depot works on gross margin dollars. Today, Lowe's works on gross margin percent. I'm going to tell you, if you walk into a Lowe's line review and their category hurdle rate is 27 and you come in with an item that's 25, do you know that item? Your meeting had ended long before you ever got to your presentation. They shut down. They are not going to buy products that are dilutive to their gross margin. That's a Lowe's thing. Now, with a Home Depot thing, if you're dilutive to the category, then you better show them how you're going to get incremental growth to give them the gross margin dollars that they need, and they'll buy it all day long. But you got to speak their language. You can't just throw out a cost and throw out a retail and hope it sticks. Hope it makes sense. You've got to learn those hurdle rates. You've got to understand what you're aiming for, and then you can be a lot more successful. But they're not going to support you if you're dilutive to their plan. It just doesn't make a whole lot of sense. And again, run spreadsheets. You got to do it. Go in like you know your numbers and sell them like you believe them. Even if your projection's a little higher than you really believe, sell it like you believe it, because it's going to be the game changer. The big companies do this really well. The small companies don't. It's really hard for them. It's really hard to, you know, speak this language, because they're just not exposed to it on a regular basis. Where the big companies, they have analysts and logistics people. They got all these people that are helping crunch all of these numbers. Smaller guys don't have it. But it's not, you don't have to overcomplicate it. You just have to show that you listen to them and that you understand what's important to them. And then the last piece here is incremental sales. If you tell me that you're going to grow your sales at 5%, okay, great. I'm not going to make a lot of changes to get a 5% increase, because I'm going to grow that anyhow. So if you want a buyer to get really excited about a meeting, talk about incremental sales. And then you're going to perk them up. So if you just put more items of the same type of product in, all you're going to do is spread the sales. You're going to get more sales, and that's good. But what I'm trying to show you is the difference of why your buyers just don't get excited when you get more sales. You're getting it. They're getting nothing for it except spreading it out. And when you spread it out over more products, what happens? Your inventory goes up. So you're fighting the metrics that they're being rewarded on and or judged on a day-to-day basis. We talked about this, but stealing products from another vendor, it's going to turn you into just commodity pricing. Because that's what you're playing. And I'm not saying you shouldn't try to fight for existing business and things that are there. I'm just talking about the difference of why the buyer thinks the way that they do. So at the end of the day, you just need to ask yourself, are you creating top line? Are you creating the numbers? Are you adding to the things that are important? So if you look at the metrics that a buyer at Home Depot gets bonused on twice a year. They get a mid-year bonus and they get an end-of-the-year bonus. They get bonused on top-line sales growth, they get bonused on gross margin dollars, and they get bonused on managing their inventory. The Lowe's piece is very much the same. On a monthly basis, they're a little bit more hammered on gross margin dollars, but on their yearly budgets, it's gross margin percent. So that's really what it's about. So does anybody have any questions? I'd be happy to take a few. No?
Yeah, how do you keep up with all the buyer changes?
Yeah, it's tough. They've what happened a number of years ago, a couple people did some behaved poorly as far as kickbacks and poor behavior. Some people went ill, and what happened in that scenario is that retailers got gun shy. And Target's probably the worst at it, right? They change buyers. It seems like every 9 months. I mean, barely remember their. You don't even get your Rolodex updated. Rolodex? Did I say that? Holy God! I have it. I don't look at it anymore. Oh, it's right next to my day planner. I don't even know how to answer that, because the reality is that you're not going to have a buyer probably more than 2 years. And if you have a buyer at 2 years, you better be looking. They're either going to get fired or they're going to get moved. It's just the nature of the beast. What I will tell you is that when you're doing things that are really incremental and really exciting, attend some store walks, get out, make sure the divisional merchandise managers know who you are and what you're doing, so there's a transition from buyer to buyer. Is very, very helpful. And so much of that has to do with size, right? If you're a really small vendor, getting time with a DMM is going to be really hard. You can do it on Thursday store walks or more informal kind of places, and I would suggest you try to do as much of that as you can. But they're going to continue to change. I don't see that changing at all. the internet, if you change the graphics on your bag because you think the customer feels it's stale, probably not worth your money. If you're changing the graphics on your bag because you're going to play into what's more important as times change, i.e. words like organic and those types of things, right? Then I would say yes. So if I were sitting on an old bag of colored mulch and it didn't talk about how long that color was going to last, and you would assume, I think you'd have to be making changes to update those attributes. But change for the sake of change, I think, is just expensive for you. I don't think it affects the customer that much. It certainly depends on product, but you know, if you have really ugly packaging, yeah, you should update it. But if you have pretty good packaging, don't change it just to change it. All right. Well, thank you very much for having me today. I enjoyed it. Thanks.
Safe travels.
Yep.
Thank you, Steve.
You want this?
We're going to take a shorter break, a 15-minute break, and then we're going to start again upstairs for the rest of our afternoon sessions. So try to join us as quickly as you can. Thank you. And thanks to BASF.